time to take a break from political talk and discuss an issue that's important to us all. What makes your desert garden grow? Whether you have a green thumb or would just like to have one, join Edmundo Resendez for a special Voice of the Public for the Gardening Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. We'll discuss tips to be a successful gardener in the desert, from what plants to plant to when to plant them and when to water them. Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at NMSU is our special local gardening expert. Call him right now at 575-646-2212 or join us on social media. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift certificate courtesy of Guzman's Color Your World Garden Centers. It's time to blossom your garden in the desert after the news.
KRWG's Gardening Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org is brought to you by White Sands Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative providing loans and deposit accounts for consumers, offices in El Paso, Las Cruces, White Sands Missile Range, and TRC. Information at WSFCU.org. Welcome to Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. Time now for KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Join us as we take a break from political talk to discuss an issue that is important to us all in the desert. What makes your desert garden grow? From what plants to plant, when to plant them, to when to water them. Ask your questions or give us your gardening tips at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or join Fred Martino at our social media desk with your questions or tips. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing for a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. You can watch the show live on Facebook as we live stream it. Our guest is who I like to call the man with the greenest thumb in the Mesilla Valley, Jeff Anderson, who is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. He is here to answer your questions to help your desert garden blossom. Let's move beyond xeriscaping on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Jeff, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Thank you, Edmundo.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and my question right off bat, we posted a picture of a before and after of your house. What is the secret to making your desert garden grow in the desert?
I would say commitment and water, loving care, having a little bit of knowledge, although a little bit of knowledge can sometimes be dangerous. But yeah, commitment. That's one person doing all that work.
So who helps you around with your desert garden? Because what kind of plants do you have in your garden?
I have everything I like to grow. I like to test out plants. So I work with a number of different landscape designers as well. And they're always looking for, you know, mass plantings of this, like a big swath of grasses or something like that. But I only have my yard. So I use my yard as my own personal research as to what kind of plants will do well here. So that's what I do there.
Where is your yard? Where is your house located in the Mesilla Valley?
It's in the Alameda Historic District.
What kind of soil did you inherit?
You know, I've lived in three different places in Las Cruces here, and all three places, luckily for me, were good soils. So I'm in the valley, and the good part of the soil there is that it's richer than having sandy soils up on the mesa, but also I have good drainage. And people that live in the valley don't always have good drainage because they can have adobe-type clay where it's so thick and so heavy that the water won't even go through it. So I've been really blessed that three times that I've moved, I've landed in a good soil.
575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or you can join Fred Martino at our social media desk with your questions or tips on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Thank you for joining us. Jeff is our guest. He is with the New Mexico Cooperative Extension Service. Jeff Anderson, he is an agricultural agent. Jeff, let us go to Amanda, who's got a question on Voice of the Public. Amanda, you are on with Jeff. Okay, Amanda will join us. Amanda, you are on with Jeff.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about controlling squash bugs without pesticides.
Okay, that's a very difficult one. That's one people usually want to know about. What can you do to control them?
To use or not use pesticides. You know, I've been around gardening shows for quite some time, and that's always a popular question. How can you best garden without the use of pesticides? Is it possible?
It is possible. You can. The best way to do it, if you really want to go down to it, is exclusion. You can put up screen houses and totally exclude the insects from getting in. But that isn't always practical. So for squash bugs, some of the things I've learned over the 34 years that I've been here, people have taken the ends of the stems where it comes out of the ground and wrapped them in tin foil, just tight enough so that the squash bugs can't get in there and do damage. You could try some diatomaceous earth around there too, and that can scrape into their bodies. Hopefully that'll cause them to lose fluids and die that way. Hand picking, that's organic. All those things are organic. There are other organic compounds like nicotine, but those are really toxic. So there are chemicals that are less toxic sometimes than organic elements.
Jeff, what's a good hardy tree for our area?
So far, either the Chinese pistache or the red push pistache. So they have different breeding backgrounds. Obviously, the Chinese ones come from China, but the red push is a hybrid, and most of its genetics come from North Africa. So they're extremely drought-tolerant, deep-rooted, long-lived trees. And, you know, sometimes I worry that if we overplant them one of these days, we're going to get into problems with an insect or something. But currently, there really aren't any problems on them.
We did a survey on KRWG's Facebook page, and we asked the question, and it's a question that's been around, which is the mulberry question. Do you consider the mulberry tree to be an invasive species to our area? And the polls came back saying no.
I agree.
You agree?
Yeah, I like the mulberry tree.
Why does it get such a bad reputation?
The reason it gets a bad reputation is that people take a mulberry tree, which is a very large, rapid-growing tree, and they plant it in a small postage-size lot and then try to make the tree behave as a small tree, and it's not. So it's surface-rooted. The roots grow up, obviously, on the surface of the ground. They tend to push up your sidewalks. They can push up your house. They can invade your sewage system if it's not sealed properly. They can get into all kinds of things like that, and it's not the tree's fault. It's the location it was planted in.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Let us go to Beverly, who is standing by. Beverly, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Okay, Beverly's not on, but...
Yeah,
there you are. Hey, Beverly.
Okay, yes. Hi, this is Beverly, and my question to Jeff is I'm having difficulty transplanting mature hedgehogs. That either for one reason or another, I need to move them. I'd like to move them to a place that is, you know, sun all day long. And what I'm discovering is they get sunburned and they either don't make it or, you know, suffer or so on. Now, I know about marking the sun side, so I do that part, but I don't know what to do for them.
So the
Any suggestions?
Yes, Beverly. The best thing to do for moving most cactus, obviously you've got it right when you say mark the south side or the side that was originally facing. That's very important because you want to re-angle that back into that area. The other thing is, you know, you can dig it up early in the spring, maybe February, beginning of February. You want that root system to actually dry out for at least 2 weeks so that it can heal and callus over. And then you want to go ahead and plant it. You want to get it planted before March. And if it was in the shade and you move it to the sun, it's got to adapt to that sunnier condition. And that has to be done before March.
Okay, so before March.
Yes.
All right. That sounds like some help for me.
It still may have some sunburn in that, but it's more likely to not have sunburn if you get it moved to its location before March.
Now, what I do is put something over to sort of filter the sun, you know, either we'll say straw or sticks or something like that. That
right.
seems to help.
That helps a whole lot, yeah. Putting something over
yeah.
it will help. And generally, the time you have to worry about is from basically the end of March up until July for it
mm-hmm.
to get sunburned. After July, if we get the rain and the rainy season, then they tend to be fine from there on.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, I will follow that. And I love my mulberries. I don't think they're that bad, and I take good care of them, and they're very, very tall.
They give us shade.
Thank you very much,
yeah.
Beverly.
Okay.
You can join us live on KRWG's Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You can also join us on our social media desk with Fred Martino is standing by, ready to hear from you. We are live streaming the show. You can see some of the beautiful plants that Jeff has brought in, and we're going to talk about those plants in just a bit. But right now, we want to go to Elizabeth, who is joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Elizabeth, welcome.
Hi.
What's on your mind, Elizabeth?
Yes, the mulberry tree.
What's
you know,
your...
a lot of people are in favor of it. Simply because it provides so much shade in our area. The roots is not really the big problem with mulberry trees out here. The non-bearing mulberry trees produce these fronds, I guess, pollen, lots and lots of pollen, and a lot of people are allergic to that. I would think that the ash would be a much better substitute for a tree out here in our area. It doesn't use as much water, and they grow pretty large, too.
Well,
and that's about all I wanted to say about the mulberry tree. I'm absolutely against them.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. So, that is the general disagreement I have with people in mulberry trees is allergies.
True. People have allergies, but allergies are a lot of times an indication of your own personal health. So there are true allergies where people are really allergic to things like the mulberry trees and other trees as well. You can be allergic to pecan trees, but I don't see people wanting to get rid of all the pecan trees because they're a huge industry here. But they do produce allergies as well, and it's hard to distinguish the mulberry pollen from pecan or from oak or from any of the other trees, junipers as well. So we can't eliminate all the different trees. But some of the people that have severe allergies to mulberries, which I did have incredible allergies.
As did I. When I first moved mm-hmm. to the area, I lived in a house that had three mulberry trees. And every spring when it would start to blossom, my allergies would kick in. Mm-hmm. But over time, I don't have them anymore.
Right. They can come, they can go. And sometimes it's an indication, like I said, of your own health. You could have a thyroid problem. And there are things, natural things you can do. There are enzymes you can take like amylase, which helps break down the coating on allergens so your body doesn't react as well. And then, I forgot the name, quercetin.
Quercetin.
Which helps prevent your body from producing histamines reacting to them. And I have this year taken both of them during the allergy season, and I did not develop allergies.
What are some actual invasive trees
yes,
or species that have come into our area?
What kind?
What kind of trees are invasive species that are not good for our area that you consider?
Tree of heaven.
Tree
of heaven was brought in because it was one of the only trees that would grow on mine spoils. But I guess some people didn't consider if it grew that well on mine spoils where it was toxic and no other trees could grow. It grew everywhere else just equally, if not better. So they spread.
Is it a water consumer? Does it consume a lot of water?
Anything that grows green and is going to consume water, and some things consume more water than others. When you do talk about mulberry trees will use as much water as you give them, but they're also actually very drought tolerant.
Okay. Let us go to our social media desk with Fred Martino is standing by. Fred Martino, welcome to KRWG's Voice of the Public. What are people saying on our social media desk?
Well, we've got a lot of questions, actually, Edmundo. Let's start with Jessica. Jessica asks, is there a good ground cover plant that will squeeze out or grow over puncture vine?
The quick answer is no. Puncture vine is one of those really invasive weeds. And the only way to get rid of it is to continuously pull it out before it goes to seed. Because once it goes to seed, that one plant could produce up to 50,000 seeds. And those seeds can live in your soil for many, many years. So they're going to keep coming back and coming back unless you do something about it. You can't just plant something and expect the puncture vine to go away. So you have to treat it in a number of different ways. Either go out there with a hoe and pull it, hand pull it before it goes to seed, or chop it out of there if you want to be organic. Or you can use a pre-emergent herbicide. Once you clear out everything that interferes with the seed's growth patterns, once it germinates. So pendimethalin is one of those pre-emergent herbicides that you could use on puncture vine.
Okay, another question from Terry. Why do half of my tomato plants do well and half don't when they're planted in the same garden?
The ever challenge of growing a successful tomato plant.
So this is where you have to know a lot of things from the homeowner. Are all the tomato plants the same variety? If they're not, there's a lot of difference in varieties. Generally, heirloom varieties do not grow and produce as well here. If you're growing cherry tomatoes versus beefsteak tomatoes, the cherry tomatoes are going to produce pretty much all through the summer, where the beefsteaks may not produce because they react to heat. Above 85, 90 degrees, most of the time the pollen doesn't fix and it's killed and the tomatoes don't set. So they like cooler weather. So we're working on that. It could be differences in soil. One plant could be infected by curly top virus. So there could be insects attacking it. So there's multiple reasons. So it's hard to say why half of a garden would produce tomatoes and the other half doesn't. You can look at watering. Is it getting the same? Is the soil the same? Many, many reasons. So each person that asks that question, it may be an individual answer as to why they're not growing. But tomatoes are difficult to produce here because of our heat. That's the main reason they don't produce very well.
What is a good tomato to grow here? And you mentioned in our conversation earlier that a cherry tomato would be good.
I like the cherry tomatoes because I get tomatoes all summer long. I don't have to worry about if it gets quite too hot. They still keep producing. So even though they're small, you know, little cherry tomatoes, you've got tomatoes all through the season. I know most of us like the big slicing tomatoes. Celebrity has been a proven winner around here. I've grown a number of other tomatoes. There's one Italian one called Costoluto Genovese. I really like that tomato. One called Sioux, and that's S-I-O-U-X. That's been great. Heat Wave, Mortgage Lifter. There's all kinds of different ones that you can grow. Getting your soil right is important. Making sure that you've got good organic matter, the right nutrition built up in your soil, and then finding the right location. Make sure you have water. That's critical. Consistent watering, not watering one day and skipping a couple days, because then the tomato, when it's forming, starts to grow, and then you don't water for a few days and the skin toughens up, and then you put water on it and the tomato cracks open, or the whole growth process of the tomato shuts down, so your tomatoes don't grow properly. They have to have consistent moisture every single day.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. My guest is Jeff Anderson. He is here to talk about gardening in the desert, ways that you can successfully garden in the desert. He is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. I'm Edmundo Resendez. You're listening to Voice of the Public, KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Let us go to Sarah, who has been patiently standing by. Sarah, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Thank you.
What's on your mind?
I have a really nice bunch of rose bushes in my front yard. They bloom all winter long. It's amazing. I have roses in December. But the problem that I see is they look like they have, I don't know, a fungus or something on the leaves in the summer, and it looks every year like it's going to kill my bushes, and then in the winter they seem to come back, and I was wondering if that's something that's common in this area or not, if that sounds familiar.
Yes, it does.
What I can do about it.
That is very common around here. We have a lot of salt. We have very alkaline water, high pH, lots of salts in our water. Mm-hmm. And those salts in the summertime, when everything's evaporating really quickly and the leaves are transpiring very quickly to cool themselves, are taking up water really quickly, and salt builds up in the plant. And if you get water onto the leaf, like if you're watering by hand, mm-hmm. or if you got sprinklers, that water gets on mm-hmm. the leaf. those are all salts that are drying. It's just like in your shower. If you don't clean it off, you get calcium buildup. Well, they get calcium, they get salts, and that built up on the leaves, and it starts burning them. So that ends up burning off the leaves. And in the wintertime, without the heat like we have in the summer and the sun and everything, then things kind of return to normal, and the plant's able to re-leaf out and look a lot better once it cools down.
So what can I do in the summer to help kind of alleviate that problem for the roses?
You want to mulch your roses to help reduce evaporation from the soil, the moisture, to help slow that down. It helps cool the soil as well. You do not want to get water on the leaves of your roses.
Okay.
So you want to, if you're going to wet them down, sometimes they can get spider mites if they're too dry. So you want to, you can wash them off early in the morning, but don't do it too often, because the salts, every time you put the water on, it's putting salt and it's going to keep building up. So wash them off in the morning if you need to, but don't do it too often, and mulch them well.
Okay. All right.
Thank you,
so
Sarah.
Much.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Nancy, who is joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Nancy, you are on with Jeff.
Hi, I have an overgrown choya. It's probably 30 years old, and the core part of it has probably an 8-inch trunk, a very wooded, and a lot of the middle branches just look like wood, but on the end, they're all very nice and green. But I'd kind of like to cut it back. What's the easiest way to do that without, you know, destroying the plant itself?
That's difficult. Getting a choya with a trunk that big is actually a dream of most people, to get them that big and more tree-like.
Does somebody want it? Oh, sorry.
It's difficult to cut them back, because generally if you're going to cut a trunk back that's that big, you know, it's probably going to kill that part of the tree, and it'll have to resprout from around the base. It's sometimes easier to start over again. That's debatable.
Possibly,
but it's debatable. Once they get pretty old, sometimes they do not come back, because you've got that big a trunk, and it tends to rot before it can grow back.
It looks almost like it grows up and out and back into the ground and out again. Is that possible? Could it have done that?
I suppose it could have if it grew up and tipped over a bit and touched the ground. Anywhere those pieces touch the ground, they can re-root, and then it'll grow back up. So if you wanted to start it over again, if it got too big, I guess you could cut it out of there, but take pieces off the end, new pieces.
The nice green pieces.
Yeah, and let them dry out for several weeks, and then replant them, and you'll have it the same plant back over again starting.
Okay, well, maybe that's the best way to go, because, and of course, the rabbits live underneath it, so who knows how many roots are left.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Nancy, for joining us KRWG's Gardening Confidential. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We are live streaming the show on Facebook. You can watch the show as we broadcast it live on KRWG and KRWG.org, 90.7 FM. Let us go to Tom, who has been standing by. Tom, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. You are on with Jeff.
Thank you, guys, man. Everything's very informative. Hey, I just got a question for Jeff. We just moved into a new house. Got about 12 oleanders. Don't really want them. How do we get rid of them?
Oh, do you know how old the oleanders are? Their roots go down really deep.
Yeah, they do. I found that out after I started digging. I trimmed them down to the stump, and it's like I give them a breath of fresh air. They're going even nicer.
That is true. So why do you want to get rid of them?
We wanted to plant some pines in the back. Actually, they were kind of being used as a privacy fence, I guess, of sorts. But we're thinking of maybe putting some trellises or, you know, some pines or something like that back there.
Okay.
But I'm finding out it's kind of difficult to dig those guys out.
What part of town do you live in?
Near the university, near Wyoming up there, off of Corley.
Okay, so these have been in for some time. So their roots are well anchored into that. And actually, oleanders make a good screen for privacy. And they are beautiful with flowers. Pine trees, you know, you're going to grow pine trees, and I caution on that as well. because people start growing pine trees, and especially Afghan pines, you know, they have about 5 growth spurts a year at least. So you're going to have a lot of needles you're going to be raking up, and then people get upset because they're like raking needles all the time. So that's something to consider.
We're kind of debating whether that or just add maybe about 3 foot of trellis to make it more of a privacy fence.
So if you wanted a nice solid evergreen, you might want to consider like an oriental arborvitae. They're very drought tolerant, and they'll be a solid green wall. It's something to consider instead of the pine. They won't get as big, and it'll be easier to manage, especially in town.
Okay, so nothing on how to, maybe just a little bit of C4 and some dead cord, and let the neighbors know, pull them out.
Some what?
Just blow them up. And stuff.
You don't want to do that.
We'll have like a block party.
Usually, what I see when people have oleanders they want to remove, they have to get a backhoe to get them out of there.
That's what I kind of figured. And there's kind of a small access gate to the backyard.
Yeah, either that or a lot of digging.
Yes, I already done one, and finding that out. I just thought maybe there'd be a stump remover or something that you could put in there, maybe to stop the growth.
Kind of difficult. Yeah, there's too many stems and everything else like that. So, and you don't want to be putting poison in your ground because that'll affect things in the future too.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of figuring before I did it. And I'm glad you guys are on the air.
All right, thank you, Tom, for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. We've got other calls to get to. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You can also join us on our social media desk where Fred Martino is standing by, ready to hear from you. Let us go to Angie. Angie, you are on with Jeff. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello, Angie.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I want to plant some grass in my backyard. And it's a big area, and it's it's out of city limits. It's like sandy rock kind of dirt, which is the best grass to put. I would love something that stayed green all year long.
Okay. So which direction out of the city limits are you? Are you in the valley, or are you in the mesa, or where?
North of Las Cruces, northeast.
Northeast. Okay, so your soil is probably kind of sandy out there, I take it?
Yes.
So having a grass that's green all year is difficult because, you know, if you're willing on a large lot to manage a lot of watering, fertilizing, and mowing, then you could use probably a fescue-type grass, one of the fescues.
Okay.
However, people generally prefer the Bermuda grass. It's more drought tolerant. It's green through the summer, and you can kind of relax and take it easy for the winter, and you don't have to worry about your grass and watering and all that kind of stuff. And Princess 77 is a great grass. You can seed it. It's actually a very beautiful Bermuda grass. And another great thing is that the city of Las Cruces gives away free biosolids. So if you put down like an inch to a half an inch air, mix it into the soil, it'll provide a really great basis for nutrition for the grass. And when you plant the grass seed, you got to remember, you probably may need to water it up to 10 times a day. Short bursts of water, but you cannot let that top thin layer dry out because that's where the seed is.
Oh, nice. Okay. So
Princess 77.
Princess 77, and then check with the city to get that those nutrients for the top of the soil.
Yes, you have to pick them up yourself, though.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Angie. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing for a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. We have two of those available, so when you call in and you have a question, you'll be automatically entered into a drawing for a $25 gift certificate courtesy of Guzman's Color Your World. Let us go to Gary, who is joining us on the phone line. Gary, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Hi there. Hey, Jeff. It's Gary up the road from you. Gary Comunius. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Gary.
Good. Hey, I just want to mention a few things. First off, if people are interested in knowing what to plant each month of the year, they can go on Facebook to Seed Share Las Cruces.
Okay, Seed Share Las Cruces.
Yes, and John keeps that up, and you know, every month what to plant. Something I have had success with year-round, a couple of them, are arugula and chard, specifically giant forward-hook chard. You just can't stop them, so they go all year round if people like. The arugula will get very spicy in the summer, but it will grow. Something else that I've been experimenting a lot with is the Jerusalem artichoke. And I like it for several reasons. It's easy to grow. It's a tuber that looks like ginger when it comes out in November when it dies off. And it is very good for diabetic and pre-diabetic people, which is something this community could use. And people really like the taste of it, the crunch. Plus, once it dies off, you can dig it up for 3 to 4 months in the winter, and it just stores in the ground for you. As a matter of fact, Jeff, you know where they took the trees down by my house there on Court? The Melendres?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I've actually put in some Jerusalem artichokes, so by the end of the summer, you know, people will have some late-day shade there because it does grow 6 to 10 feet. Now, I just did want to mention that I've had some success with early tomatoes this year, and I've been trying to do this for many years. But anyway, I went to a Lush and Lean, which the city puts on, and there's some great information, by the way, and I found out that one plant you might want to try is the Celebrity. I heard you mention that earlier. Mm-hmm. And also, I had always thought, Jeff, that you could not plant anything under a pine tree. But what I found out at Lush and Lean is that you cannot germinate anything under a pine tree, but you certainly can transplant. So what I did was put a couple of Celebrities under a large pine tree in our yard, and they're 4 foot tall and producing right now. So I'm pretty happy with that. I just always thought you couldn't do anything near pine trees, but I found out different. So that's pretty much what I wanted to share with the folks.
Well, thank you very much, Gary, for sharing your tips and information as to what people can do. And let me ask you this, Jeff, are there certain plants or trees that people should just avoid planting in our area that might be harmful to other plants?
Traditionally, it's been walnut trees. They have allelopathic chemicals that they produce that hinder the growth of other plants around them. And even fescue grass actually can do that as well. So sometimes you get plants in your fescue lawn that don't grow very well, like your trees or shrubs.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. My name is Edmundo Resendez. Jeff Anderson is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. He is our guest, and he is here to answer your questions on what makes your desert garden grow. Let us go to Fred Martino, who is standing by the social media desk. Fred, what's on people's minds?
We have a lot of questions. Bev asks, what is the best potting soil mix to help my potted herbs and flowers go longer between watering?
The best potting soil. You can buy all the expensive ones in the box stores or at the nurseries and everything like that. They all work pretty well. They're all organic based, so they have generally bark or peat moss in them, and that's going to hold on to moisture. So anything with an organic compound is going to hold on to moisture better than most anything else. If you use sand, it's not going to hold on to water very good. I like to use, I use the cheap stuff. So I go to the nursery and I buy the cheapest bag, and then I add biosolids from the sewage treatment plants to supply the micronutrients like iron and zinc and magnesium and things like that. And I grow great vegetables in that, and I don't have any problems with water issues.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned the biosolids that are free from the city of Las Cruces. Someone else asked about that, and you mentioned it to one of the other callers that it's a good thing to help new grass grow as well. All right, well, we have a question from Teddy, and Edmundo has photos for you on this one. A question for Jeff about Teddy's stripe agave plant. Says, my plant has small holes on a few leaves. They look like cigarette burns, but are not. What has happened to it? Sometimes I see hummingbirds hovering around it in the morning, but I never have seen them touch the plant. It's gone very pale in color, seems to be sagging. Is it getting too much water? We don't purposefully water it, but it's near a sprinkler. I think the wind blows water on it. It's in a raised rock bed with plenty of drainage.
So you probably have an insect in there. And just like borers get into trees, there's a weevil that gets into the agaves. And generally when you see a mark like that on the bud or leaf, that's where the egg was laid. And the egg hatches in there and burrows into that tip of the agave. And it will kill the agave.
575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, if you want to join in on the conversation. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing for a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. Helgi, you are on with Jeff Anderson. Welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Helgi?
Hi. Yes, hi. I have a cottonwood tree, which is about 20 feet tall. And this is the second year that it has very sparse leaves. And to, I also noticed there's a brown, sticky stuff coming out of one place on the cottonwood stem.
Okay. So cottonwood trees are very short-lived here, and that's because our temperatures don't get cold in the winter to put them fully dormant. And they're also extremely susceptible to every insect and every disease. So they can get...
Okay, can you repeat that again?
You're up in Tularosa.
I live in Tularosa, and there's lots of cottonwoods here.
Right.
But mine is not doing well.
Yeah, it may have picked up either an insect. It could get borers in it, and then it'll ooze sap and things out of it and get slime flux going in it. It can get Cycospora fungus. And usually that has orange pustules that come out of it. So they're susceptible to a lot of different things. You could have your, since you're in Tularosa, have your county extension agent in that county come out to your house, and he'll take a look at it and help diagnose what it is.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Helgi. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Sylvia, who has been patiently standing by. Sylvia, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Hello, this is Sylvia.
What's on your mind, Sylvia?
My question is, and I checked with my county extension agent, I've got nut sedge that has infested my garden. And I don't know how to get rid of it. He told me the only thing I could do would be to spray it with poison. I've been digging it up, but boy, that stuff is impossible to deal with.
Right. Nutsedge roots, the little nuts down there can grow 2 to 3 feet down into the soil, so it can be very difficult. And then there are two types. You have yellow nutsedge and purple nutsedge, so you have to key them out to know which one you can control. So most of the nutsedge controlled with chemicals is yellow nutsedge. Purple is resistant to almost all the different chemicals. So depending on which one you have, depends on how well it can be controlled. However, you can also, nutsedge does not like shade at all. So, you know, trying to shade it will help diminish the amount of nutsedge. Burying it under a thick mulch can help. But the only thing you can do is constantly go out there and chop it out organically. And hopefully if you don't have a big area, you can go out there and just keep pulling it out. But you have to do it on a daily basis because those little nutlets put the green spike right back up overnight. So you have to starve it out.
Thank you, Sylvia, for joining us on KRW.
Okay,
we've got other calls to get to.
I have a comment that you might appreciate.
Go for it.
I had a problem with squash beetles, and a friend of mine told me something I thought was crazy. She said, plant mint around it. I tried it, and sure enough, I have not had any squash beetles as long as I keep mint growing around my squash.
Right. A lot of insects do not like the odor given off by mint and the chemicals that mint produces, and it repels them away from there. The only trouble with mint is you got to watch it. It's extremely invasive and can form a very solid network where, you know, you couldn't even plant the squash.
Yes, I have found that, but yeah. I dig that up too.
Thank you, Sylvia. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Join us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Jeff Anderson, agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. Kathy, you are on with Jeff. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm calling about a dwarf peach tree I planted in my yard.
Okay.
It produces plenty of peaches. They look really good. But when I harvest them, all of a sudden I find these little worms that come out, transparent type of worms. Number one, what are they? And secondly, can they be controlled?
Okay. In order to control them, first off, we'd have to identify them. So the best thing you can do is bring a sample of the insects into your Cooperative Extension Service, and for free we'll diagnose it, and then we can give you the best guidelines on how to treat it. But I would have to see what those worms are first.
Oh, because they're, you know, the peaches all look so good. And even, yeah, you know, there's no holes or anything else in them, but it's transparent, you know.
Right.
Almost like a jelly substance that comes out.
Are you in Las Cruces here?
No, I'm in Alamogordo.
Alamogordo. So get it over there to Sid Gordon. He's your county extension agent, and we'll figure out what that is.
Thank you,
okay.
Kathy.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye now.
Okay. We've got about 14 minutes to go. If you want to get in your questions or comments, join us on our social media desk. We are broadcasting live on Facebook. We are also waiting to hear from you at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to David, who has been patiently standing by. David, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for a great show. I have in my front yard three barberry bushes. They are, I think, red pygmy barberry bushes. Mm-hmm. And one of the, at least two of them keep drying up. Some of the main stems are drying up and all the leaves dry up. And I wonder if there's a particular insect that gets them or something, or if this is a common, thing that happens to them here.
Barberry, yeah, that is kind of a common thing that happens around here. So you have to investigate it. It could be a fungal disease. It could be like a fire blight, which is a bacterial disease that's invading there. It depends on how are you watering these plants.
I have a drip system, so I'm not watering them on the leaves. I'm just irrigating them
right
through the drip system.
Sometimes even, you know, you don't even have to get water like that, but if there's enough moisture around the base of the plant, bacterial diseases can spread extremely fast. And so we'd have to take a look at that. And then that they're on drip, too, that the plant comes originally in either a peat moss or a bark-type mix, and when you plant it into the ground, people a lot of time think that the water is getting to the plant, even though, you know, they're on drips, and they may be even be watering them by hand. But a lot of times that water is not getting into the interior root ball of that plant when it was planted, and so it dries up gradually over time, and the plant ends up dying. So the best thing
okay.
we can do is sometimes try to take the hose before you plant it, wash off a little bit of that soil to expose some of those roots, and then get those roots in direct contact with your native soil.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Let us go to Fred Martino with our social media desk. Fred, what are people saying?
Okay, Pat wants to know, what would be a good shade tree that's low water use?
That's a good question. We mentioned that at the beginning of the show. Right now, probably the best ones are the Chinese pistache, and there's one called Keith Davy. It's a selected variety, so it's a male tree, because pistache trees come in male and female, and sometimes you don't want the female tree producing berries, because then you get them coming up all over, especially when they're very drought tolerant to begin with. So Keith Davy, the Chinese pistache, or the Red Push pistache, which is a different species in the genus. So those are two really great trees currently, and oak trees actually are very good.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Fred. Fred, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
This is Fred.
Hey, Fred.
Yes, this is Fred from El Paso Westside. I've got a problem with my breadbird pear tree.
Okay.
It's turning yellowish on one side, and I've tried ironite around it, around that particular site, but it hasn't helped. What can I do?
I get a lot of calls on people having problems with Bradford pear trees, or they could be aristocrat pears or Cleveland select pears. They're all kind of in the same species or just different cultivars. Generally, it starts in the root system. Anytime, you know, like if you're putting down iron and you're not getting any response, there's something wrong with the root system. So when you planted it, it could have been a constricted root system, meaning that when it was in the container, the roots grew in the container into a circle. And when you planted it, they can't grow out of that, so they strangle themselves underground. So the tree will continually decline because it's literally the roots are strangling each other and they can't take up nutrition. So one of the first things you see is the tree browning or turning yellow, things like that. Another problem, especially like in El Paso, depending on where you're at, you could hit a real bad pocket of dry or caliche type soil, high in alkalinity or high in salt, and cause one side of the tree to turn bad. But it all involves nutrition. There's something going wrong in the soil itself.
Uh-huh. I've got the clay. It's out in the west side of the city where there used to be farming around that area, especially alfalfa.
Okay.
Yeah, how about if I put red sand around it, maybe deep in there?
That's not going to help it. How big is the tree?
I would say maybe 6 to 8 inch caliper.
Okay, so, and has it been good in the past?
Yes, it was pretty good green all the way around.
Okay, what kind of iron are you using?
The one with that yellow tag from Home Depot.
Okay, you're talking like ironite? Probably yeah, ironite, yeah. Right. Ironite is not a very good iron to use in our soils because its iron content is not available in our alkaline soils for very long. It's a very short period. EDDHA iron actually is a much better oil iron that works better in our soil. EDDHA. EDDHA. And that particular iron is available in our alkaline soils for a long time, and that would help. But you'd have to have somebody come out there and probably look at the tree to see exactly what's going on there, why half the tree is turning yellow. You want to check the irrigation, make sure the irrigation is sufficient all the way around the tree so that it's
being evenly. You know, we're irrigating. And when I irrigate, I put in about maybe a good 6 inches.
Okay. And the other thing I want to mention here, too, for a lot of people, people put down weed and feed on their lawns, and they have trees in there. Weed and feed, the weeding part has a powerful herbicides in there that are actually designed to kill broadleaf weeds, but they kill broadleaf trees as well, and sometimes that impacts the tree.
Okay, Alfred, thank you very much for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. We've got about 7 minutes to go, so let us take some more calls. Real quickly, what's this, if you are watching us on our Facebook page, what is this special herb that you brought in with us?
I'm working with it as a bonsai. It's called conehead thyme, or sometimes called Spanish oregano. But it's not an oregano that's herbaceous and can freeze back to the ground. This is a woody shrub from the Mediterranean. And I'm working with it as a bonsai because it has great characteristics trunk-wise.
What other plants do you have in front of us?
I have some Hypoastes, colorful foliage plants, generally used as house plants or in the summer outside. I have some coleus. I have an adenium, which is native to Africa. And adeniums, you'll find them in all kinds of box stores around here. They used to be extremely expensive years ago, and you'd just treasure after finding one. Now you can find them like everywhere. They're related to oleanders. They are not very cold hardy. They cannot take temperatures much below 50 degrees. So I collect them. I keep them in my house. I bring them in the 1st of October. I don't bring them out until after May sometime. And they like the heat, and they're great to have on the patio, and they bloom all summer long like oleanders.
All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing for a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. So if you want to get in your calls and maybe not be able to get in a question, you can still get in to the drawing for a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. Kevin, you are on with Jeff. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. I go to the dog park an awful lot, and for some reason, dogs seem to like the trees, but they make deposits on it, and some of the trees aren't growing worth anything. I wonder if there isn't something we can do to counteract their urine on the trees.
The only way to counteract the urine is excess water. So
excess water.
Yep. The urine is urea. It's high in nitrogen and salts, in the urine. So you just have to get the water in there to leach it out of there. A little bit is good, but too much is not so good.
Right. Someone mentioned Epsom salts as a possible help.
Nope. Epsom salts are another salt. That's why they call Epsom salt. It's magnesium sulfate and provides magnesium to the plant, but it's still salt.
And that's not good.
Now, if you're trying to get rid of the salt, adding more salt doesn't help.
And are you talking about watering the tree trunk or just the normal irrigation?
Well, it's not so much on the trunk. It's just normal irrigation. You want to get the salt out of the root system. The root system in most all trees are only 2 to 3 feet deep in the soil.
Uh-huh.
So you got to wash that salt below that level.
As I understand it, the city waters three times a week. Actually, I guess it would be six times a week because it's two times a night each time that they water. Do you have any idea about amounts of these? These are like 8 to 10-year-old, well, maybe 12-year-old deciduous trees of various kinds, supposedly desert hardy.
I'm not sure how much water the city's putting on there. But, in a dog park, you got a lot of dogs peeing all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have problems.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us, Kevin, on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Thank you for all of those that already called in and got your name into the drawing for a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. Let's wrap up the conversation with one of my favorite topics, and that's composting.
Okay.
What's a good secret to good compost?
Mix it up. You want to have enough brown material, that's dead organic material, with green material. So generally the ratio is about 25:30:1. So you got to have enough green stuff in there to provide nitrogen to heat up the pile so it can break down, but you got to have water and then you got to turn it. If you don't have enough nitrogen, the pile's not going to break down very well. If you don't have enough water, it's just going to sit there. You know how dry we are in the desert here. If you have too much water and it's wet all the time, then it's going to go anaerobic, and that's when it smells bad. So you got to turn it, keep it aerated, keep enough nitrogen in there to keep the organisms happy and breaking down the products.
What are some good fruit trees to grow in our area?
Depends on what you like to eat. I like apples. Most of the fruit trees grow really well here. Peaches, pears, apples. I like apricots, except the birds keep eating them all. Plums, too. Depends on what you like to grow.
Where is the co-op extension office located?
Our office is at 1170 North Solano. I almost said church. That's where we moved from. North Solano, Suite M. So we're in the public health building there.
Okay. So let us go to the drawing for a $25 gift certificate. Congratulations to Cassie, who sent in a question via Facebook, and also Terry Blevins. Congratulations, and thank you for joining us on KRWG's Voice of the Public. So, you're located on Solano and where again?
1170 North Solano, Suite M. But there is an extension office in every county in all of New Mexico. So anybody in the state, you can go to your local county extension office, and we're on the internet, so you can find out what your county extension office, where it is, and you can contact them for any kind of problems you have.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for joining us.
Thank you.
We'd love to have you again.
Thank you, Edmundo.
KRWG's Gardening Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org has been brought to you by White Sands Federal Credit Union, a non-for-profit financial cooperative providing loans and deposit accounts for consumers. Offices in El Paso, Las Cruces, White Sands Missile Range, and TRC. Information at WSFCU.org. KRWG's Gardening Confidential was produced by me, Edmundo Resendez, and Jacob Lockwood. Fred Martino handled our social media desk and is content director. Mark Johnson was our technical producer. Jacob Lockwood staffed our phone lines. If you missed today's show, it will be available shortly on KRWG.org and on our Facebook page. I'm your host, Edmundo Resendez. Thank you for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential.